Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Thank you so much for staying with us. So we started off with that conversation around Witness D. I was speaking to our reporter, Karinda Jokmohan, who was just outside Marius van der Merwe's home, where he was gunned down on Friday evening. And I want to engage you on this one and really want to invite you for your comments on what you made of what we saw. I mean, it totally shook me, I must be honest. And I think a lot of our colleagues were really, really distressed by the events that unfolded just after his assassination. I'll call it as an assassination. And of course, you know, lots of questions arise around witnesses and the protection of witnesses. So that is a conversation that is not new. However, we don't seem to be moving forward with this conversation. And I'd like your take on this one. 086-000-0959. And of course, you can also send us voice notes on 063-688-0959. I've invited Chairperson of Public Interest SA, Deboho Khas. We've spoken to Deboho before. Deboho, thank you so much for talking to us this evening and welcome to Point of View.
Thank you for inviting me and a good evening to you and your listeners.
It's not a good time, Deboho. It's quite distressing. You know, your first thoughts when you heard of the news that Witness D had been gunned down?
My first thought that came was, I hope we're not again. Those are my words. Like, not again, especially given the very delicate environment that we find ourselves in with all what is going on in Portland. And you said, oh no. That's what I just said. Not again.
What could have been done better? And I know we don't have all the details in front of us, but there's always this question of whether, and this question had come up even before they started the proceedings. Do we have enough security for our witnesses? Do we have enough protection for our witnesses? And there is this tension around how one accepts protection, the protection program, and the actual effects of the protection program. Talk to me about your thoughts on the current, you know, protection programs that we have and how they actually, in real terms, affect families and the witnesses, the whistleblowers.
You know, the funny thing is we do have resources in this country to make sure that witnesses and whistleblowers get to be protected. Unfortunately, those resources are being allocated to an area where we believe that they are not really needed. For example, you've got the Presidential Protection Services run by SAPS that enjoys so much of a budget of the kit that it actually drops that of the Hawks. The budget allocated to the Hawks is now that on its own just to look after the politicians. And you ask yourself, other the president and the deputy president and maybe the minister of defense, why are we still wasting so much money on these blue light brigades who go on and harass people, and some of them even abuse the very same system? And actually, if you write reports currently, there's actually corruption involved in how they actually bill for overtime on that system on its own. The abuse is still there. And yet you ask yourself, when there is such a dire need for resources within the police itself generally, and also for programs such as those witness protection. And when you hear reports that there's been such excesses, and yet there's a dire need in the case of witnesses and whistleblowers, you ask yourself, is there political will to really do the right thing by the people of South Africa? And at this stage, we believe all the platitudes, whether from the president or from the Minister of Justice, they mean nothing to a family who has lost a member such as this.
So there seems to be an attempt to distinguish the difference between a witness and a whistleblower, and the fact that they don't enjoy the same rights or protection, or even offered the same rights or protection. Do you want to speak to that?
Yes, certainly. And a great deal, I would say, I'll go along and agree with you. The difference is obviously a whistleblower is not treated the same as a witness, because with regards to a witness, already there's a matter that is enrolled before court where they are supposed to be going to be given giving evidence immediately or already currently. Whereas a whistleblower, it might very well be that the information is so valuable that when this matter is now reached a stage where there's an arrest, then they'll be required to be a witness. But obviously, that takes time. And in that interim, people know that Sorensen is going to be at some point called as a witness, and they are vulnerable because they're not part of the witness protection program.
Mm.
Therefore, that is where the weakness of the system is, because it waits for a trigger.
I know what you mean.
It needs something to trigger. The system needs to be triggered for it to be said. Oh, the legislatively, then this falls under witness protection program. But by which time, it might very well be too late. Because if I know that this person is potentially going to speak up, to testify against me, I'm going to make plans to get rid of. So that is where the difference is. So you need a system that is all-encompassing. In other words, it takes cognizance of the fact that somebody may be a whistleblower today, but the information is such that it is critical for the successful prosecution of a matter that will be enrolled later. And this is the case where you find Marcus van der Merwe was in. He was still a whistleblower. And in the case before the Maganga testimony, he was actually I believe he was a witness, or because it was a matter that was referred to the IP.
The 2004 case that he had opened, yeah.
Absolutely, and including the very case that we are now all about
talking about.
So that is the difference. And there is not really much distinction between. There shouldn't be much difference between a witness or a whistleblower, because in the end analysis, both of them are very important assets to the prosecution of any matter.
So I'm going to invite calls or questions for you, Teboho, because I think people have lots of questions and they don't know where to direct them to. 086-000-00959. You can also send a voice note to 063-688-0959 if you want to ask about this whole protection and witnesses and how it affects you. If you are one of those people, how it may affect you. Teboho, there's the matter of people. You know, we are told now by the Minister of Justice that Mr. van der Merwe had rejected the program. And obviously, speculation being, it's not easy to accept a witness protection program just based on what exactly the offer is. And a lot of people saying, look, you have to imagine what it looks like in real terms. In real terms, you may be isolated. In real terms, you may not be able to continue earning a living in the way that you would otherwise earn a living. And so there are restrictions there that make the decision to accept the witness protection program not so simple. So maybe let's talk to what it may look like for those who end up taking a witness protection program.
Thank you for that question, because what the minister hasn't actually came up and told us also.
Yeah.
Is exactly what you've articulated, but also more importantly, what did they do to try and convince him about the gravity of the situation and why he should go under witness protection, and yet he refused it. And of course, if you're running a business or if you're employed, you're earning a livelihood for yourself and your family, and any disruption to that needs to be mitigated. And did the state say we will make sure that you, whatever financial losses you're going to incur, we're going to make good? We haven't had that. And secondly, whether indeed the state itself was able to make sure that they didn't provide for the psychosocial support that you needed, not only him, but his family, in the event that they now have to be put into witness protection program and removed away from the social support. Remember, we as human beings, we get sustenance from the social support that we receive from others. Now, when you're put out of that, put into a witness protection, it affects you. It affects your children, it affects your wife, your girlfriend, or your husband, or boyfriend. Therefore, the question is, what did the state offer and what did they do? What did they do? Because it is not good enough to say he rejected it. And remember, the very people who do a risk assessment or a threat assessment are police. And here you've got a matter that involves police. And with what you know about police, it might very well be that it suited them for him to refuse this protection, because some of their bodies are actually implicated in the very same. As long as you can say he rejected it, then he'll be vulnerable to being attacked and harmed in the manner that they did.
We need to talk about a deeper conversation, because apart from what we've just discussed now, there's also the little matter of being a whistleblower against the very people who are supposed to protect you, and not knowing to what extent you're speaking to the right people.
Yeah. That's the third thing. The third thing is that you must agree to be protected by people against whom some of some
yes.
are actually
yes.
trained at guns at you, and some have forced you to carry a body to go and put it at a game or in the mine dump. Some of them are friends or acquaintances with people who you witness them suffocating and do the kind of act that led to the death of this person. Some of them are still employed in Ekurhuleni, and some of them are former subs members, and some of them are still members of the subs flying squad in the Kragpan area. And you ask yourself, are you going to agree? And if you do, it is of no use, because those people are going to be very well the ones are protecting you. They're actually going to be the ones that might be giving information about your locality or any other vulnerability within the system. Because we've had instances where witnesses were actually killed while in witness protection. You ask yourself, how is that even possible?
When you reflect upon these things, and we just gave everybody the title of your title, that you work with Public Interest SA, the deeper questions that we need to be asking, Teboho, are beyond us talking at the level of we are now whistleblowing. There are deeper societal issues that we need to be discussing, and maybe I want you to address those for a minute with the work that you're doing.
You know, in fact, we should not be even found in a situation where we make witness protection or whistleblower protection. If we really live in a society where we value ethical citizenship, because you and I would at some point know somebody doing something wrong, but we never find it in ourselves to speak out or take action about it. I'll put it at a very basic, basic example. We would know somebody who's bridging or connecting illegally into the national electricity grid, a neighbor or a friend or a family member that we know of, and we choose not to speak to them, or we choose not to discuss with them or to report it to the authorities. And in the process, that might harm our children or neighbor's children because of exposed wires, and people lose their lives. And yet, we as society, can't you think that it is somebody else's responsibility to go and arrest or to stop these people, yet we don't do it in our own accord? We do know of people who go and take money from hospitals and build houses, build mansions, buy expensive exotic cars, more cars than they would drive in their lifetime. And yet we keep quiet because those are our friends, those are our blessers, those are people that we can skim off the top of the cream. But yet we don't. So if we as society do not encourage the kind of conduct, as we know about the Zamazamas, which Mr. Van der Merwe was also helping police to actually get rid of in that area. We know of Zamazamas that we hire our bedroom in our homes, or our moms rent their bedrooms, provide them sustenance, provide them with that illegal electricity, and they still benefit from charging them rent. And we keep quiet. We encourage the flourishing of crime, rampant crime. And when things like this happen, we all feign surprise, as if we don't know about these things. We don't know how, in a small way, we as members of society could actually participate in the eradication of crime, which often starts small and then it ends up in a manner that we all know.
So, to what extent is, for me, part of the problem is that when we have an inquiry like this, we had the Zondo Commission and so on. Of course, because of the reference, terms of reference, there has to be some sort of a focus. But as a nation, maybe part of the problem is that we then become so narrow in what we're looking for, it's difficult to then really broaden the scope so that you can make people accountable. So, for instance, we've seen with Meres van der Merwe that he went in there as a witness for something else, for what is happening of course, we are seeing Ekurhuleni come up, we are seeing issues of the police come up. But it does seem like he was also dealing with issues in illegal mining, for instance. And yet the terms of reference were not speaking to that. And it may very well be that he was killed by that network. And of course, we are not investigating that because we are focusing here. And maybe what I want to get at is that, you know, we then go through these phases where we are very narrow in where we focus our energies, and not be open-minded enough in seeing that the problems could be deeper. And maybe we need to cast our wides wider so that we can get to the point where we don't keep coming back here, because I think it's every 2 years we are back at a huge inquiry and then we pat ourselves on the back and then we realize we just scratched the surface, if anything.
You know, 2 years is even long. I mean, not long ago, in the middle of this year, we had Mkoma Fole being taken out in the very echo lane.
Yeah.
So you ask yourself, will thoughts and prayers be sufficient to bring Mkoma Fole back to his children and family? No. You know, will thoughts and prayers be sufficient to stop to bring back Marius van der Merwe to his family and children? No. And we keep going, as you say, this cycle that seems to be perpetuated by either even us as society, who are not indignant and who are not showing public uproar about what is happening, and ask for answers, not only answers, for action to be taken. But how are we going to do that when, on the one hand, we also glorify somebody wearing Fendi when appearing at an ad hoc committee or whatever fashions that they're called? How are we going to do that when we actually envy a woman who purports to be a mayor of a city, a poor city, dressed up in attire that is worth more than just around the same salary, annual salary she earns, $3.5 million at a go. How are you going to glorify, how are you going to be taking action when we glorify the very same people who take money from Tembisa Hospital that patient needs for their care and build mansions, when we see their cars and we want to be like them? And those are the kind of people that, unfortunately, even our MPs, the member of parliament, so say we must, our youth must look up to. I'm a hot man. How can they learn from you? Because this is the nice thing you're doing, and how you get you know your yes, you know. And we need a conversation in our own little spaces, in our own little spots. Mm. We need to have that conversation with our sisters who know that they'll benefit from this illicit economy, as I may call it, only because they keep quiet and they encourage it. As long as they benefit, so you can go to Dubai and all that. We need a deeper conversation that cuts across every facet of society. But yet, here we are, we talk about Madlango. But what the beautiful thing about the Madlango Commission, much as they are just focusing on the criminal justice system, it is something that is an eye-popper. It lifts the lids off our eyes in terms of what the police or the criminal justice system has been up to, and why are we not getting the kind of outcomes that we need to be getting from the investment or the budget that we allocate them.
I'm going to put you on the spot, because earlier on today, in his opening statement, the president of the ANC spoke to how we need to stop glorifying ANC members who are flashing cars and clothes and all of that. Do you think that's going to shift the needle at all?
No. That's the short answer. Because what would a Vivek Gowda be without flashing his expensive, ostentatious lifestyle in public? What would be a if he doesn't rock in Robben Island in a chartered flight or a chartered boat or whatever it is? What would be a Fugilin Babula if he doesn't go on campaign trail with that expensive Mercedes G-Wagon in KZN? What would be, because we have attached so much value to material or ostentatious material consumption as a society, and the politicians are at the forefront of wanting to be celebrities and advancing that cause without any care as to the legality of the source of the money. And it's a tall order. It does not pay for the president to mention it, but I'm sure that those who are guilty of that were probably just saying, well, you're just going to say it, but he's not going to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at it, if politicians themselves, they should be leading by example. If you are living in a society that that experiences such levels of poverty as we are, you'd restrain yourself in terms of how you project yourself, what you dress out there. Not that people don't have, the president himself, he's a rich person, but you never see him dressed up in Louis Vuitton or whatever it is from head to toe, you know, and you can afford those things. But it's the messaging that we also send out there. But we as society are also demanding that, because we also aspire to actually go for ourselves in this, no matter where the source of that. If my child can't get from home with an iPhone 24 model, if there was such a phone, I would not even ask that. Them, why did you get this? How did you get it? I would just say, oh, mm-hmm. You know, and we as society also have to ask these questions as to what do we do in our own spaces, much as we expect of others.
Sure, a lot to think about. Thank you so much, Tebogo. Tebogo Khas, he is chairperson of the Public Interest SA. Just, you know, really helping us think through what this moment means, actually. As I said, you know, I was completely gutted when I saw the killing of Witness D. And of course, a lot is still to be uncovered about the details thereof. But we do have to reckon with the moment and ask ourselves what it is that we are doing as a nation about where we are right now. Let me take your voice notes. I did ask you to send voice notes and comments on 0636880959. Folks, this is not anyone else's problem but ours. And I think that's the problem. This is not anyone's problem but our. This is our society, and we are shaping our society as we go along. These are our children we're bringing up. These are our uncles, our brothers, our husbands. And it's not just the men, by the way. We are all complicit if we do not change how we want to define who we are going forward. Let me just quickly take a voice note.
And I feel like hits are still going to roll. These rogue criminals must just be locked up. Don't know what is it that can be done, but something must be done to protect the witnesses. And the witnesses themselves, they know that like it's the end, as that Madala apparently was saying to his family. There's nothing that can protect them. So it's a mastery process. It will speed up. People be put behind bars and be interrogated while they are behind bars. Hey, condolences to the family.
Click kaya959.co.za. To download the Point of View podcast.